This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a three-time champion, check out my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
I don't love junior mints. I just don't hate them. I don't understand why they are treated like second-class candy.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Oh, you don't understand why a candy that is basically toothpaste wrapped up in stale chocolate is treated like a second-class candy. All right, I get it. It's a good, valid question.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Is there a time to change? You know, the three teams I've drafted this year, second-class candy is pretty good.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Happy to have you with us on yet another snowy, freezing, cold, awful Thursday afternoon in Western New York. Yeah, boy, you really have a way with words. Thank you. I appreciate that. Joining us now, I am the Bulldog, by the way. Mike is away on vacation this week, hopefully somewhere where it's not freezing and awful and always snowing. Joining us on the Western Hotline right now is Spencer German. He covers the Cleveland Browns, host of the Locked On Browns podcast, and also a host at our Cleveland Odyssey station, 92.3 The Fan. Spencer, I want to lead off with this question, and if it's a quick no, I understand, and we'll move on. But I'm curious if a dude who covers the NFL team in Cleveland, a city without an NHL team, is at all interested in this Four Nations face-off, because it's really captured our imaginations here in Buffalo. That's a tough way for this to begin. We already lost him. We got to try to get him back here. We're hoping to get some info on how the Browns are doing here with in the face of Myles Garrett trade requests and, of course, the Deshaun Watson situation ongoing. I don't know. Maybe that was my answer on whether this dude cares at all about the Four Nations face-off, that the phone went dead as soon as we tried to do it. Things happen. That's how it goes sometimes. Glad to have you with us, as I said here, and there will be. Oh, we got him now on line one. All right, yeah, Spencer, how are you? We lost you there for a second. How are you? Oh, was that me? I don't think I did that. You know, maybe this was a terrible idea. Maybe we should just keep talking to hockey fans about the Four Nations face-off game tonight. I mean, that's, it's an alternative anyway. Now, I think we'll get it together here. Just having some malfunctioning equipment, and we'll figure it out and get to it here as we go. No joke on what it's like outside, man. Like, it is just all kinds of harsh out there. All right, we're going to take three strikes and you're out. You're going to punch them up. I'm not touching anything. Spencer, are you there?
Can you guys hear me?
I got you, man. Yes, we hear you.
I thought I was part of a bit for a second.
Yeah, I know. Right, I was joking around. I mean, I let out of you heard me lead you in with, like, you cover the Browns in Cleveland, a city without an NHL team. Does anybody there give a crap about the Four Nations face-off? And then the line went dead. And I thought, okay, this maybe I should just keep talking about the Four Nations face-off. It's a sign. I don't know. Do you have an answer to that? Are you paying attention to this at all?
Yeah, so I think the first time around, I was trying to answer. I said I don't know if I can speak for all of Cleveland, but I said I'm certainly interested, especially you know like we kind of have the opposite here in Cleveland with an NBA team, and the way that everyone was talking about the NBA All-Star break,
right?
A lot of the conversation centered around like, look what the NHL is doing and how into it everybody seems to be versus what the NBA did this past weekend. And everyone's talking about how terrible it was and maybe should they just scrap the whole thing. People are even throwing out, like, should they do like a USA versus the world sort of setup for the NBA All-Star game?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think it's kind of interesting that this has kind of dominated the conversation, even in markets that don't have a professional NHL team. But I'm certainly going to be tuned in tonight. I think anytime you put American pride on the line, people will get excited.
Yeah, the NHL has been down that road. Team North America, Team Europe, Team World, like they've done that.
Yeah.
With their All-Star games, and they're always a disaster. And I hope they never go back to having All-Star games. Not that they can do this every year, but even every other year, I think would certainly suffice with how it's going. Well, anyway, Spencer, we certainly did not get you on for your reaction to the Four Nations face-off. So I'm happy you were able to play along and hope you enjoy the game tonight. How much of a blindside is the Myles Garrett trade request to the Browns organization?
So my understanding is it wasn't a surprise to the organization. I think more so it was the fan base getting caught off guard, 2 weeks back when he dropped the kind of press release version of his declaration on social media or through like the NFL Network guys and all that. So I think the fan base was a little caught off guard, but even the fan base I think had some warning signs because Miles had kind of talked at the end of the year about how, if the Browns' vision for the team doesn't align with what he wants, he would consider playing elsewhere because at this point in his career, he wants to win. He's 29, getting to that age 30 where things kind of can fluctuate for a player and you can start to drop off a little bit. And I think it makes sense that he's trying to prioritize that. But as much as the fan base maybe didn't necessarily expect it to lead into Super Bowl week a couple weeks back, from my understanding, the team was already aware that he was kind of asking to be traded a couple weeks advance of that moment.
You know what really stood out to me about that press release, and I'm glad you referenced that, was his throwing the GM, Andrew Berry's words, back at him in the press release. The Cleveland to Canton phrasing that I think Berry used during Super Bowl week, or if maybe it was before that, talking about Myles Garrett. And to have that in the press release felt like, I mean, really a shot.
Yeah, and you bring it up, like he actually said that those comments initially. I think he maybe reiterated them at the Senior Bowl, but he initially said them at his end of the season press conference.
Okay, thank you.
That was like early January. So not only did this was like Myles Garrett sitting on this for a while and kind of just unleashing it at that moment of like, man, you said this almost a month ago, and it's not what I want. We obviously all took note of that here in Cleveland as well. I don't know. It's interesting because, a couple of weeks before the season ended, Miles was asked about, the regime and having, like, if they're still around, because Jimmy Haslam was asked so much during the season about, do you still have confidence in Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry? Is there any worry that they're going to get fired? And he basically downplayed it, and he kept on telling everybody he could, no, I still believe in these guys, like, I'm not firing them. And so I thought that was interesting because Miles, you bring that up to Miles, and his reaction was kind of like, yeah, as long as these guys are here, like, I feel pretty good about the way things are going. And so something obviously changed for him between, I guess, those comments and kind of finding out, like, yeah, Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry are still going to be the ones driving this bus. And the end of the season when he maybe was given this plan of what the Browns are going to do. And that's the hardest thing is, like, I don't know what they told him. Like, we don't know what the plan that they presented him with was. I would imagine they didn't, like, promise him, hey, we're going to draft a rookie at number two because they're still doing evaluations on these guys. Mm-hmm. But like maybe they said, hey, it's a veteran, and he felt like, well, the veteran options aren't that great, so I want out. So I think there's still some of this to unfold, and I still kind of wonder if there's a way to get Miles back on board if you get a certain quarterback or if, you draft the right quarterback that maybe he's into, and maybe that's pie in the sky. But right now the Browns are sort of not budging, and I also don't think it really matters anyway because I don't think they can really move him until after June 1st regardless.
How much of a chance do you think there is that all of this is just a ploy to become the highest paid non-quarterback in the league? Like, does he just want a new contract from the Browns? I mean, it seems like a bit of an overreaction if that's the case, but I'm just curious.
Yeah, I would put that, I'd say it's very slim, like maybe like 2%. And I think that's been, we've exhausted that part of the conversation, I think, a lot here in Cleveland, just because, you know, he kind of, had, if that's all it was going to be, I think he made his point at the end of the season, like I alluded to, where when he came out and said, you know, it's a possibility that I'll play somewhere else, and sort of like said that for the first time and wasn't necessarily fully committed to just like staying with the organization going forward. That's the moment, I think, where you just kind of like leave that, you let that marinate, and the organization says like, okay, we're going to pay you. And Andrew Berry's indicated that he wants to pay Myles Garrett. So I definitely don't think it's that. Like him escalating it to the point where, like you said, sort of took the shot at Andrew Berry, had the public press release, went on Radio Row, was talking about why he was doing this. That felt like more than just, hey, I want to get paid. This feels like him trying to sort of control his own destiny in a way, similar to what we kind of see in the NBA where guys get to sort of dictate what they do right. And where they go.
Spencer German covers the Cleveland Browns for 92.3 The Fan, our Odyssey station in I say ours like we own these places, Spencer. I don't know about you, but I'm definitely not in that group. Anyway, he's on the Western Outline with us. So how urgent is it for the Browns to get this done? You mentioned June 1st. I mean, transactions can take place and be designated as June 1st. We've seen that with other trades in the league with big ticket players. What's the realistic chances that the Browns do this? Because the cap ramifications, I mean, there's what, $36 million in dead money, if I've interpreted all that right. I mean, that's a lot considering what they've got on the hook for a quarterback who's probably not likely ever to play for them again.
Yeah. I mean, the money part of it's the biggest thing. Andrew Berry has been sort of in the ilk of, this is the only thing I guess he really brought with him from his time with Howie Roseman, but similar to Howie Roseman, he's been really good about like manipulating contracts every year to sort of kick the can down the road, use those void years. It is a practice that the Eagles have done really well as well. So he knows how to do that, and he certainly could create enough space that maybe they could eat some of that money now and feel pretty good about it. But the problem is $36 million in dead cap money is like not it's a pretty exuberant fee and cost that I don't necessarily think the Browns are like ready to eat right now. So that's why I bring up June 1st, because as you guys know, like if you trade him after that point, then you can sort of split that payment into 2 years
right.
Versus like all of it coming out of the cap immediately. So I think that really does complicate things, because Barry's been pretty meticulous about, you know, how much money he's taking off certain contracts in a year, how much dead money he's willing to take on in a given year, and their dead money fees this year already like $39 million, something around there. So I don't know if they want to add like a lot more to that, as you know, with somebody like Miles. Even the Deshaun contract comes to mind, which they're probably going to restructure here in the next week or so when they get ready for free agency. So they have to be mindful of those things, and I don't know that they're ready to eat that money just yet. And I think they kind of envisioned, well, hey, we'll give them a contract extension, and that'll sort of balance things out as the years kind of go on, because that money would just get added to later years of his contract. But now, if he really wants out, you got to think about doing the contract in a way that would leave a potential future team taking on more of the financial burden than obviously what the Browns would be taking on.
Right. What kind of player are we talking about at this stage of his career? I know he's just a year removed, so maybe this is a stupid question, from being the defensive player of the year. But where is he on his career timeline? Like, do Browns fans feel like maybe, you know, you're getting out at a good time because he's nearing 30? Or is this like a devastating blow because he's still one of the best defensive players in the league?
I would say it's probably more so the latter for a lot of fans. Like I think a lot of fans understand where he's coming from with the trade request. I also think though, like they hate that his, you know, the prime years of his career have been wasted. So I think it's more of like that devastated part of it. But I haven't watched Miles. I didn't watch Miles at all this year and feel like there was a drop off. There were some injury concerns this year with his foot. He was having a foot issue pretty early on in the season, but as you can tell, he made it through the rest of the year, and it ended up kind of getting a little bit, I guess, or less. It became less of a problem as the year went on. And so I guess that's the biggest thing with him is, you know, do those injuries start to pile up as he gets to the age of 30 and he gets later in his career, and does something bad actually happen? Because to this point, he's never had like any really serious debilitating injuries that have cost him major, you know, stretches of seasons. But to me, he's still playing at a high level. You know, he's worth every penny for a team that's willing to give up what it's going to take to get him. And, you know, I think you take that chance because he still right now is in the prime of his career. And could there be a drop-off at some point? Sure. But Miles also is kind of one of, like, those different breed type players. Like, he truly is like a freak of nature athlete where I think he can probably prolong his career a little longer than most guys that play his position just because of how he's kind of built and the athlete that he is.
We've been kind of stumbling around here in Buffalo pondering what it might take to pry him loose from Cleveland. Obviously, you know, I would expect them to, you know, take the best offer they can get and extract every ounce of assets coming back the other way. I imagine you guys are thinking even and talking even more about it. What's your feeling on what it could take to get Myles Garrett out of Cleveland, Spencer?
Yeah, I think the starting price has to be two first rounders, which is, you know, kind of the Andrew Berry mentioned that at the Senior Bowl, like, I wouldn't trade him for two first-round picks. And it kind of felt like to me, now that we had after we had the context of him requesting a trade, that kind of felt like him signaling the teams, like, that's the starting point, right? Like, it has to be more than two first-round picks if we're going to trade Myles Garrett. So I thought that was kind of interesting. But I think that's where the conversation starts. Now, theoretically, if a team has a player that is maybe seen as valuable enough to maybe warrant a first-round pick or of that caliber, maybe you throw in a player that the Browns get back in return at the same position or elsewhere, and you throw a first-round pick in with that. I think, like, we're tossing around these different ideas of, as we hear more and more out of L.A., about how, you know, Matt Stafford's return to the Rams centers around a contract extension. Like, maybe they don't kind of come to terms and they can't figure something out. And if he becomes available, maybe the Browns are willing to take just one first if they're going to get Matt Stafford back in return and feel like they have some stability at quarterback. So, but I think if you're talking just like base level, a team's trying to get an offer together and send it out to the Browns, I think it has to start with two first round picks. And then, you know, what else gets added into the deal kind of goes from there, whether it's, you know, additional picks, maybe a second rounder in there, whether it's, and I think, like, if you look back at the Khalil Mack deal, which I forget all the details of that one, but I think there was at least two firsts involved, mm-hmm. and then a couple other picks involved. I think that was maybe a sort of a solid reference point that the Browns are probably going to look at as well.
Yeah, I would think for sure. Spencer German from 92.3 The Fan in Cleveland on the Western Hotline with us for just a couple of more minutes here. My idea, and it's very pie in the sky, I admit, because it's very convenient for the Bills, and how often do things work out like that? I'm fine. Draft picks, fine. This year's first, next year's first. Throw in something else. I'm thinking about Gregory Rousseau, who's a defensive end set to play on his fifth-year option. Like, he's due a new contract. Maybe that's not appealing at all to the Browns. It's the same position. It's a good player. It's not a defensive player of the year candidate. But, like, from my perspective, from what I would think the Bills' perspective would be, if I'm acquiring Myles Garrett, I'm not going to do a contract for Gregory Rousseau. I'm going to try to ship him out of here, maybe even in a corresponding move. Doesn't even have to necessarily be Cleveland, but, like, basically Garrett replaces Rousseau. He's due probably close to $25 million in a new contract anyway. $22 to $25 million is what SpotTrack has his estimated value at anyway on a new deal. So that's that for me, that would be, like, perfect. I don't know if that sounds like a horrible idea to the Cleveland Browns, though.
I don't hate the idea of Rousseau. You know, I've watching the Bills when I can. Like, I'm familiar with his game. I know he had, like, the 8 sacks last year. I think he's kind of gotten gradually better and better as each year's gone on. And I think from the Browns' perspective, like, if you're trying to think about rebuilding your defensive line a little bit here, and Miles is truly going to be gone, you can probably start with somebody like Rousseau on one side. And then this draft class is super deep along the defensive line in general. So maybe you can get a player, especially picking number two, if they don't go quarterback, which I think is kind of the prevailing thought is that they will. But if they don't, maybe they take Abdul Carter, right? And then maybe that mm-hmm. sets you up with, like, a revamped defensive line pretty quickly here. So I don't hate that idea. It would just kind of be about, like, what the package of picks looks like around Rousseau. Because, like you said, he's not a Myles Garrett caliber type of player, but he's a pretty good player. You know, there's the fifth-year option. You can decide whether or not you're going to pay him or not after that. But I've seen that idea thrown around a little bit. I don't hate it for the Browns. I think it would just come down to, like, what the picks attached to it would look like. But, yeah, like, I think there's – there's something there for the Browns because it allows them to start sort of planning on life without Myles Garrett on the defensive line.
Right. What is the plan, you think? You mentioned the drafting. Shedeur Sanders, Cam Ward at the top. I mean, I don't know. Those might be the only two guys worthy of that high a pick, but there are other intriguing quarterbacks. Jackson Dart, Jalen Milroe maybe, as well as you get further into the draft. What do you think the plan will be? And is Watson ever Watson's never playing for them again, right?
I would say no. I think that's pretty like the consensus seems to be that ship has sailed, and it's probably for the best anyway. Like I think if the Browns could get out from under his contract right now, they probably would try. But you know, you don't need me to sit here for another 20 minutes and tell you how much of a disaster that whole thing's been from like a PR standpoint, right, and just on the field. But they've already sort of signaled, I think, with the decisions they made this offseason, moving on from Ken Dorsey, who you guys are familiar with, going back to Stefanski's offense, like they are pivoting away from the Deshaun Watson business and trying to sort of revamp this thing and find a different quarterback. I've kind of come to the belief that I think they will take a quarterback at two, but what's interesting is like there's been so much smoke linking them to Shedeur Sanders. And that hasn't really been, like, since Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski have taken over, there hasn't been a lot of, like, leaks or public acknowledgement of, like, any one player this time of year that they're maybe interested in. It's kind of been, like, more broadly they've talked about guys. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of find it interesting that there's been so much noise connecting the Browns to Shedeur Sanders to the point where I almost wonder if, like, they're trying to manipulate the board a little bit and maybe convince a team like the Giants to trade up to get him so that they can maybe get Cam Ward or something like that. Or maybe they have, you know, feelings about a different guy like Jackson Dart and they want the Giants to trade with them and then they can get some more picks. So I'm kind of fascinated to see how this plays out, especially starting next week at the Combine, you know, what Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski sort of say about where they're at with things and the quarterback positions. But I sitting here today, I'm becoming more and more convinced that they are going to take a quarterback.
It's so interesting because just 2 years ago.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast.
Oh, the season before last, with, you know, again, with Watson underperforming and hurt, you end up with like a revolving door at quarterback, and this team made the playoffs. So it's not like, you know, again, like the Garrett trade demand throws a big wrench in that, but like if you could convince him to stay, it doesn't feel like that team has to be that far off if they get quarterback right. Like, are people thinking about what Jaden Daniels did in Washington last year and hoping? I mean, I don't think any of these guys are rating as that level of prospect, but who knows? It's the draft. The Browns are just in a very interesting place because it doesn't seem like the rest of the roster maybe would need to start over, but yet the Watson thing and now the Garrett thing, they're kind of really stuck.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that would probably tell you the roster stinks and, you know, we overrated it and all these different things. But I'm more in the boat of you where, you know, I see a team that made the playoffs with a kind of, you know, less advantageous quarterback situation 2 years ago, just a carousel of guys playing. And I think you're right. Like, if you land the right guy, you could at least steady that ship enough to be a playoff contender. And to your point on Jaden Daniels, like, I've talked about that a bunch. I don't necessarily think any of these guys are Jaden Daniels, and I think it's unrealistic to like go into it and be like, yeah, we just drafted the next Jaden Daniels if we take Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders. But You know, like you said, you never know. And there's always like a level of unknown with these guys. There's always a level of like, you can't account for everything, like how they're going to process the game, how they're going to get acclimated to the game. Those things matter. And you know, it was funny hearing Miles on Radio Row talk about the idea of playing with Jaden Daniels. And now that's somebody he'd be open to playing with, because it kind of hit me like, do you think a year ago this time, as much as people were high on Jaden Daniels, they thought he was going to be taking Washington to the NFC Championship game a year ago? Like, what if the Browns do identify the guy that they think is the perfect fit, and if it's Shador or Cam, a year from now, we could be talking about one of those guys as, like, the next great quarterback. So there's always the possibility. And so that's why I said, like, I wonder if, you know, you have, like, David Njoku and other players going out and saying, like, we really are just a quarterback away. If we get that position right, we'll be okay. And I do think there's some truth in that. Like, I don't know how I feel that I feel like the Browns with the top two guys in this draft, like, are for sure going to get that guy. But I think you got to take the chance to try to land that guy, because, you know, if you, it's either that or you rebuild. And I just don't think that this roster, this coaching staff and GM, like, I don't think anybody's in a mode right now where they're like, let's blow it up and start over. So if that's what if you're trying to win, I think your best bet is take a rookie and hope that you have the right people in place to develop him and get him to a point where he's then talked about as one of the best in the league.
How much urgency do you sense that there is to get this thing done? Like, is it something that needs to be done by free agency opening, by the draft, or do you think it could go on into the summer?
I don't think there's a ton of urgency right now. I think that changes once we get into, like, you know, off-season program stuff, OTAs, and Miles probably doesn't show up. I think that maybe will start changing the math on that a little bit. And I'm still sort of using that June 1st, you know, deadline as kind of like my barometer of, like, when I feel like something might actually get done, just because the money involved in it here. So I don't think it's, like, something the Browns are, like, really pushing to do, unless somebody blows them away with an offer, and then I guess, you know, then they change their mind. But, yeah, I mean, Andrew Berry's been pretty adamant to this point that he's not trading him, but we'll see what next week brings, because the combine could always be an opportunity to, like, open the market up a little bit more and people start talking and getting a sense of, like, what actually they could get for Miles, and then maybe the you know, getting a deal done moves a little bit quicker.
Spencer, really enjoyed our first visit ever. Hope to do it again sometime. I'm glad we stuck with it after the rocky start there. Really enjoyed the conversation, man.
Absolutely. I'm happy to do it anytime, and I'm always happy to come on to Western New York where I'm from. So appreciate you guys.
Oh, awesome. Where part of town are you from? I'm sorry I didn't know that.
So I'm actually from Rochester.
All right.
My parents still live in Irondequoit, so... I was on the Bills beat for a few years, so I'm plenty familiar with the drive back and forth, and I obviously listened to you guys a ton when I was living up there. So,
all right, now I feel old, but awesome, Spencer. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. All right.
Yep, appreciate you guys.
Spencer German, 92.3 The Fan, covers the Browns at the lowdown on Myles Garrett and the way forward for them. All right. There. Football quota filled. We'll see. I might have a few more things to say about what we talked about with Spencer, but I'm itching and dying to get back into talking about the Four Nations face-off. So maybe just a couple of footnotes on football and on the Bills, and maybe, you know, the pursuit of a Myles Garrett trade. We can talk about that for a little bit, but if you're ready to get back into hockey, feel free to get in here at 803-0550, and we'll tee that up again. Four Nations face-off final tonight, Team USA, Team Canada. I am the Bulldog. Mike Shope is away this week. Thanks for listening to WGR.
It really is incredible how dialed in they will get. You know, you're taking all the best players that are used to playing all the top ice time and all the top positions, and power play guys become penalty killing guys, and it's not about the individual anymore. It's just about playing for your country. And for that moment in time, that couple weeks, you've got to give the players a lot of credit for buying in, especially as a coaching staff, into what you're trying to sell and the amount of work that's got to go into that short period of time to win a championship.
At Sabres head coach Lindy Ruff talking with the guys in the morning yesterday. That's Sneaky Joe and Jeremy White. Lindy or some other coaching staff member, often Seth Abbert, make a weekly appearance. Anyway, Lindy talking about the players and the credit they deserve for diving headfirst into all that the Four Nations face-off has entailed. It's been a tremendous success for the NHL, and that credit goes entirely to the players, I think, like Lindy is saying. I wholeheartedly agree with that. Because if you didn't have the buy-in, like they ultimately control it. And their level of passion for this tournament, right from the start, first game of the tournament, it was evident. I know for me, it's funny, I've mentioned this a couple of times as we were getting through the round robin games last week. First game on Wednesday night, I'm like, hey, you know, yeah, I'm excited, but I was not at, like, you know, edge of your seat, peak, wow, this is going to be incredible, I can't wait to see what it looks like. I was like, you know, maybe we'll ease into it and, you know, see what we get. And hopefully by today, when the championship game is happening, we get the right matchup, Canada-US, it's, you know, really firing and the guys are really into it. But, man, right from the start of that first Canada-Sweden game, followed up by Finland and U.S. the next night, and certainly capped off on Saturday evening by Team USA and Team Canada playing their round-robin game, it was evident. Like, these guys are in to this. And I went right from like a, I don't know, a 5 or 6 on the meter right to a 10. As soon as the game started, I was already, it interests Mario Lemieux and the anthems and the whole thing for that first game. Again, the round robin game that led this thing off between Sweden and Canada. And I'm like, I'm starving for this. And it has fully met and exceeded expectations. So credit to the players for getting into it like they did. 803-0550, as I said, is the number. You want to just keep kicking this around, the hockey, I'm totally fine just taking calls on it. It's a really cool moment for, I think, Sabres fans, Buffalo hockey fans, to sort of get re-energized by the sport. I mean, the Sabres have been a very tough, tough, tough road here for a long, long time. And it's hard. I got to go back to 2011. There have been other games, I know, the playoff races and, you know, the Florida game from a couple of years ago when they seemed like they were breaking through and they missed the playoffs only by a point. There were games that mattered then that I'm sure I was excited for, but I don't think to this level. Really. For me, I got to go back to 2011 for the playoffs against Philly, 2010 for the Olympics with Ryan Miller playing for Team USA. That's the last time I felt anything close to what this tournament has brought forth. And, you know, it's a reminder, I think. So it can be a little bittersweet. I don't want to bum you out by making this point, but seeing Eichel, seeing Reinhardt, and feeling something about hockey that maybe you haven't been feeling in a long time because the Sabres have just been so exhaustively terrible for so long, that can cut both ways. It make you more bitter and angry at the state of things here because this is just such a tremendous hockey market, and I just feel like we're all just sort of sleepwalking through it at this point. And look, I'm not judging you harshly for that. I'm the same way. I can't find my way to get excited for the trade deadline or like anything. It's just, let me know when you're actually going to mean something again, is how I think a lot of fans, including me, feel about the Sabres right now. And this tournament can serve as a bit of a mirror to like reflect that back at you. Like, I miss this. I used to have this feeling often, and it's just absent. I mean, it just is. We get to calls here in 1 second. One tweet response that I got today that I really liked because it reminded me of what I felt was maybe the best time I've had in the building, at a hockey game anyways, in a very, very long time. One person responded to my Twitter poll because I said, you know, when's the last time you were excited? And I had four choices. One of them was not a regular season game from 2 years ago against Minnesota. Go figure, right? But there was a game. It was still during football season. Someone sent me the box for it, but I don't have a second here to go look it up and get it again. There was a Minnesota home game on a Saturday night. I've talked about this game before. I was in the building, And it was an incredible atmosphere. It was sold out. It was like one of these high school hockey nights. I know my son Owen was there helping coach a Nichols team that was taking part in like a shootout or something during the intermissions. And so we got tickets through his school, where he's been working as a coach since he retired from hockey. And so we went. And the atmosphere was electric. It was a great game. It was a high-scoring game. The Sabres ended up winning in overtime. And walking out of there, fans were singing the shout song down Washington Street. And it was a reminder of what it can feel like in there. But I didn't walk in the building that night thinking I was going to get any kind of a reminder of what could be. It just was organically a night that turned into a really spectacular night for hockey in Buffalo. But there was no anticipation. I was just going to a regular season Saturday night game against Minnesota. I mean, there was no run up to it. It was like, okay, fine, I'll go to the game with you. You got two tickets, fine. Like, that was it. It ended up being a great night, but the run up, like the buzz, there was no buzz. This thing tonight, man, and this whole tournament has had it in spades. Paul is first up this segment. Hi, Paul. Thanks for calling. You're on WGR.
Amen, Bulldog. You are right on point. The confluence of events that no one could have anticipated when this tournament was conceived. Now, you could have anticipated the wait we've all had to see best on best, but no one could have anticipated the political drama and just how much these guys are giving. Charlie McAvoy is now a U.S. hockey legend. Sidney Crosby, who it has been said walks on water, I said on a call to the morning show a couple days ago, he etched his face in stone on the Mount Rushmore of hockey history. He is an all-timer because of what he's doing in this tournament. And I cannot wait for tonight. To a specific lineup point, I got to see Chris Kreider in there tonight for USA. I look to what he did again in Game 6 against Carolina, scoring a natural hat trick for a Ranger team that was probably, with the exception of goaltender, out-talented by the Carolina Hurricanes, but found a way to grit through that series because of Chris Kreider. Him and Jake Guentzel are guys who show up in games like this, and I need him in the lineup over a Brock Nelson. Love to get your thought on that.
All right, Paul. I hear you, man. I would not be against that. I like the way you set that up. And you know, Kreider got in. That was the game on Monday, right? I think Kreider played and scored right off the hop there. They ended up losing the game, but yeah, I'm curious to see what the lineup looks like. Bummer for Thompson that everyone who's eligible to play appears to be at least healthy enough to play, because he went there, I guess, you know, in case someone was still sick or there was an injury or whatever, and doesn't look like he's going to get in the lineup. But, yeah, I mean, the coach did not commit to, you know how they started the tournament, and you know, too, Kreider was not in that first lineup and didn't play on Saturday night against Toronto, against Canada, but did get in. Because they were so thin, I wonder what it'll look like when we get to closer to game time and we get a look at the lineups. But I don't know. Maybe I'd be surprised if they did it, but I wouldn't be against it if they switched Kreider in for Nelson. The rest of it, to me, is locked in, right? I mean, just looking at a guy that's as talented as Kyle Connor being on what is ostensibly a fourth line is kind of incredible. I mean, the talent on these teams is just remarkable. More of your calls on the way. Hold on if you're there. I'll get to you right after a break here. We've got Joe Yurden coming up at the top of the hour, but time to squeeze in a couple more after we take a quick time out here. I am the Bulldog, and you're listening to WGR. Hanging out here on a freezing cold Thursday. Go figure. I mean, it is February. 803-0550 is the number. I am the Bulldog. Mike Schoep has been off this week, and that will continue through tomorrow, when hopefully we have a whale of a hockey game to look back on. We've been talking mostly today about the Four Nations face-off final, which goes tonight a little after 8 o'clock on ESPN, Canada versus USA. The tournament has been a rousing success, and hopefully tonight does not take any air out of that, because it has just been tremendous. And I say that about everything. Like, Saturday was obviously a high point with Canada and USA playing, and of course they're meeting again tonight. To me, all the games have been competitive and passionate and just excellent hockey across the board. Jay is first up this segment. Hi, Jay. Thank you for calling. You're on the air here on WGR.
Hey, Chris. Hey, once again, what a yeoman's job you've done this week, my friend. As always, you bring it. Real quick, I want to give a huge shout-out to the fans who I think have brought this tournament to a level I didn't expect. I know we're up against this, so I'll be quick. I've been going through a lot of stuff personally the last few weeks, starting a new job and everything else, and I'll be honest, I didn't pay too much attention to this tournament. But when I saw the opening night and Mario freaking Lemieux come onto the ice, and that crowd erupt, it brought up a fire in me that I haven't had in a long time. It's akin to how I felt watching the Red Wings and the Avalanche play in the mid-90s, where these guys just hated each other. And that's what I see happening tonight, Chris. We've got this political drama we all know about, and I don't want to get political on this, but I cannot wait to see what kind of legendary moment we have tonight. Will it be McDavid? Will it be Connor Hellebuck standing on his head? I don't know. Are they going to boo the national anthems on both sides and we won't be able to hear the singers? I don't know. But I am so ready for this, my friend. And let's get it off and let's get it going.
All right, Jay. Appreciate it. Appreciate the compliment as well. Man, I agree with you wholeheartedly. I don't know if I said it exactly right. Going into the first game of the tournament, but like you, Mario introduced the anthems. I don't really care about the booing. I mean, I don't obviously don't love it, and I don't know how politically charged everything is here. I mean, I just, it's hard to take the president referring to Canada as a potential 51st state seriously at all. Maybe I should be. I don't know. I can't even really wrap my brain around it. That's just sort of, that's over there. I certainly understand the booing. I hope there isn't any of it tonight on either side. As frankly, the U.S. booing the Canadian anthem would be what? A reaction to you being mad at us, and now I'm mad at you, and what are we, in third grade? I mean, yeah, I think you can understand, whether you agree or not with some of the politics being represented right now, you can understand why a Canadian would take issue with the president of this country referring to them as a potential 51st state. So booing them because they took offense to that just seems like reactionary and kind of stupid to me. But that's just me. I don't know. So I don't feel so much like politically charged myself watching this. I just think the hockey's excellent. I can't speak for the players. I mean, I don't know. Maybe the Team USA guys got extra jacked up by the fact that they got booed. The anthem got booed. I don't know. I mean, I think that would work on almost anyone on some level. But it wouldn't have been a surprise, I don't think. It's been happening in NHL arenas across Canada prior to this tournament. So I doubt they were caught by surprise by it. But I'm not denying it could have lent something to the juice they had going into the game. But I think Canada-USA playing in Switzerland, I think these guys would have been jacked and ready to go myself. That's just me. Thank you for the call. Appreciate it. We'll take a timeout here, get the top of the hour update. And Joe Yurden, Bleacher Report, longtime NHL beat guy, going to join us. He was in Montreal for that portion of this tournament, and we'll touch base with Joe about this huge game in hockey tonight. That is right after this. Paul Hamilton about an hour from now as well. I am the Bulldog, and you're listening to WGR.